My name is Carolyn Kessler. I'm 30 years old. Today is December 29th, 2018. I'm speaking with Carol Amato, my 80-year-old grandmother, and we're doing this interview in San Francisco, California. So, Granny O, can you just tell me a little bit about, so you grew up, you were born in Newark, right? You grew up in Newark. And can you tell me a little bit about where you were born and the community and family you were born into?
I was born at Clara Mouse Hospital in Newark, New Jersey, and in 1938. My mom and dad were first generation, just barely off the boat from Italy, southern Italy, Naples area, Campania. And I was born and raised in a neighborhood that was sort of a upwardly moving immigrant families of Italian and Irish. And it was lovely. And I grew up for the first 5 years of my life, 6 years of my life, I lived on the third floor apartment of my grandmother. My grandmother had 10 children. She lived in the first floor. The second floor was my Uncle Lou and his wife. And the third floor was myself, my mother and father. And we were there for, I was there for 6 years and felt as though my grandmother was my mother. So I called her Mama and my mother Mom. And
called her Mama because?
I called her Mama because all the other kids called her Mama. And I thought that was her name and that's what she was called for the rest of my life and for the rest of her life.
And that was because you were the eldest.
Right. I was the oldest. I was the firstborn grandchild. And I was the oldest. And I was only 8 years younger than her last born son, Dan, who was my best friend as a little kid who used to crawl around with me and play with me.
And that's because your mother was the eldest. Eldest of the eldest.
Yes, my mother was the oldest child of the 10, and I was the oldest old grandchild. I am the oldest of 20. Since then, I'm the oldest of 26 first cousins, and the majority of them are all on the East Coast somewhere or another, from Florida up to Massachusetts. But most of us were all raised within about a 5 mile radius, so we were very intermingled and close. And eventually, when I was 6 years old, we moved across the street after my mom and dad bought a house there. And then a few years later, across and then 5 doors down, my Aunt Edith got married, and she moved in there. And so she was there, and across the street from us, directly across the street from us, was my Uncle Nick and his wife, and he had 2 children. So it was like a compound, basically. Where I would go every Saturday morning after, when I was nothing else to do, I would skip up the alley and say, "Grandma, Grandma, Grandma," and my mean Aunt Polly would put her head out the door, and Aunt Red, and say, "Be quiet, don't you know I worked all week?" And I'd go home crying.
What did Nana say?
Your Nana?
Yeah, my Nana.
Okay, my mom said, my father was there the first, when that happened, and my father was furious. So he went over and had a big fight with Red and Polly and said, "If my daughter wants to go see her grandmother, you're just boarding there. You should be out and married at this point, and you're not. So you leave her alone, and she's going to go see her grandmother anytime she wants." My Aunt Red had red hair. Her name was Yolanda. Polly had red hair, and her name was Palmyra.
And then, so you had your family all around you, so you'd just kind of go out, and yeah, it wasn't a concern. You'd go over to your grandmother's house.
No concern ever. Carrie and I were just talking about it at lunch. I mean, where were you going out? What were you going to do? Nothing. Well, I may have sat on the front stoop, because we had a beautiful front porch, and we had a stoop, and you would go sit on the stoop and say hello to people going by. On the corner was the candy store. Across the street was school, so I walked right across the street to school, came home for lunch, went back to school. And the playground was always open after school, because you didn't play in the street. You went to the playground and played, and there was always supervised play. And down the street was a candy store where my uncle, who was 8 years older than me, hung out with all his friends, which were much older than me. And they took it. They watched over me. If they didn't like what I was doing, they told me to go home. You know, and I mean, and they'd go. We had a vacant lot behind the house, and they'd play football, and I'd sit on the fence because my uncle was my hero. I loved him. I mean, he was like my big brother.
Yeah.
And I'd sit on our back fence and watch them play football in the vacant lot. Next to the vacant lot was a local library for the neighborhood, and hung out at the library and read books and whatever else. It was a great place to live, you know, and it was. It was great memories, and many years later, where I live now, I ran into someone, and I said, he said, where are you from? And I said, Newark, New Jersey. He said, so was I. He said, what area? I said, Roosevelt. He said, so was I. And I said, he said, where'd you go to school? I said, Sussex Avenue School. He said, so did I. And then I said, huh? He said, well, he said, I think I was a couple of years older, a couple of years ahead of you. And it turned out he was 2 years ahead of me. And he said, what street you live on? I said, 4th Street. He said, 4th Street between what? Orange and Sussex. And he said, that's where all the rich kids live. And I just about fell apart because as far as I'm concerned, I figured we were just normal, struggling family that my father worked 2-3 jobs. And this man was phenomenal because he created he lived, let me tell you where he lived first. He lived in a cold water flat around the corner on the mm-hmm. 5-story walk up raised by his mother. And he created a paint for ship decks that was durable.
Weather resistant or something?
It was durable, very durable. And he supplied the government with it. And he became very wealthy and famous.
Well?
Pat Harrington. Joe Harrington. Pat was his wife. Anyway, so that was that. And then we eventually... I actually lived there all my life until I was the first one of all these cousins and aunts and uncles and everyone to go off to college. And this was a big thing happening in our family, very big. And when I graduated, my grandmother came to my graduation and cried for the whole time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about her?
She was a fabulous, wonderful woman. She couldn't read or write. Probably the most person I admired in my whole life. She couldn't read or write, but she knew numbers. She was a phenomenal economist and statistician. You name it, she knew her numbers, and she could tell you anything about money. And she used to say to me, Carol, Carol. And she'd take the dollar out. Stop it for a second. She'd take a dollar out and she'd show me, and she had this chest in her bedroom. And she also, now that I think about her bedroom, she had a feather bed, a true feather bed. And every time she made the bed, she had to spread the feathers out. And the biggest thrill in my life was to go across the street and spend the night with my grandmother in this little feather bed that we slept in, and which was phenomenal. But that was such a thrill because it was wonderful because I adored her. But anyway, she couldn't speak English. She spoke a broken English, and she threw Italian in. She came when she was she was very young, but because they congregated in a neighborhood with just their own kind, people from Italy, and basically the people from the same Campania area that she was from, they never really learned English. Mm. So, and then she learned English because when she took her children to school, she learned from her children once they learned English. My mother's first language was Italian. She did not speak English. My father's first language was Italian. He did not speak English. When she went to school, she went to kindergarten, and she presented this child to the teacher, and she said, teach her English. And they did. And so she was just a phenomenal person. She'd take that dollar. And she divided four ways in her hand. She'd say, see, it goes this way and that way. And she said, and always this little corner here, this little corner here, that goes in the bank. So that was her budget. That's how she budgeted, and she did that her whole life. She was just an amazing person. And she always wanted the best for her children and her grandchildren. I used to go to, after I got married, went to school, graduated, got married, I'd go to visit her because I loved going to visit her. I lived close, not real close, but close enough to drive over or take a bus or something. And I used to bring my son with me, Tom, and when I left and got home, I'd find that the pocket in my whatever, I had a pocket. If I went, put my hand in my pocket, I found a $20 bill. And at that time, in 1960, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we could eat out for a week on $20.
Yeah.
But she was just a phenomenal lady. And she, the bell system is the thing that always sticks in my mind, because eventually, I think probably in the 1970s, the bell system changed from LA 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, or whatever the number was, to a number 1234
to the area code.
So you not even the area code, this is before area code, because okay. You couldn't make long distance without an operator assist. So it was before the area code totally, but they went to all numbers, and then if you made a long distance phone call, you had to go through the operator. And so she had 10 children, my mother being the oldest, so she was number one. Lou was number two, Min number three, all the way down to number 10, which was Dan. So the kids, she knew that number one was my mother, and so forth. Well, she converted, Humboldt was our exchange, HU3, Humboldt 3. And she converted that to the number 3, wherever H was on the phone, because it was a dial system. Yeah. She would put the number down, and my Uncle Dan helped her with that. Mm. And so she called all her children all the time. Whatever she felt like it, she'd call them on the phone, and she was able to make her phone calls.
So she did that by converting the two letters
to numbers.
To numbers in order to be able to dial them.
Exactly. So... So this was a phenomenal thing. Well, it didn't happen with the bell system for at least 15 years later.
Yeah.
And they decided to do the system also. So I figured she was just smarter than Bell. Yeah. But she was a very strong woman, and she always said that we women are strong and we must be strong. She was strong and feisty.
Can you tell me what she did with Uncle Dan?
Oh, that was interesting. So he was in his 40s before he got married, and he lived at home. Right, he went to work right after high school at 18 years old. And he wasn't going to live there free, so she collected room and board from him every week. As he got his paycheck from his job, he went home and gave his mother the money. And he was figuring she was using this money to, you know, to buy food or whatever else. But, and rightly so. And so when they built a freeway, at this point in time, I was married and I had moved out to an apartment and then eventually to the suburbs. And they built a freeway through the house that we had in the city all along that street, and took my grandmother's house also. Well, she moved in with Aunt Esther and Dan got married. When Dan got married, she gave him a gift of $40,000 because that was all the money he had given her while he was living there.
That's cool. And this is the Uncle Dan that would hang out in front of the candy shop?
And he's the one that hung out at the candy store. And it was truly a candy store because you could go in there with a nickel and buy five pieces of candy. And when you can go in there with a nickel and get a flavored soda. From the soda fountain. And it was a tiny little nothing place. And maybe they sold bread. I think that was it. And the newspaper.
And candy. Bread and candy.
Bread, candy, and soda. And they would make you an ice cream soda if you wanted it, but no one could afford that.
Oh.
But.
Would you hang out there too?
Oh, no. I wasn't allowed. This was all boys.
Oh.
This was only boys. Girls didn't hang out on candy stores. I mean, that was not allowed.
Would you go in and buy candy?
Oh, absolutely.
Got it.
You go in and buy candy. And then
they'd send you home?
Get home. Or go to the playground. Where are you going? I'm going to the playground. Okay. You know. So everybody kind of washed over everybody. So it was a kind of a different...
When did you have to be home by a certain time?
Well, after school, I had to be home by 5 o'clock. So my father got home from work at 5:30. And we had dinner right as soon as he got home and got cleaned up. Mm-hmm. And during the summertime, we could go back out again. And if we went out, we had to be home by the time the streetlights went on.
Got it.
That says, okay, the streetlights are on, even if we were in the playground.
Yeah. So you said that your grandmother was one of the most influential people in your life. Who else do you think would be one of the most, had the biggest impact on your life?
In my youth?
Yeah. Or just in general, I guess.
I think as a forming of my life, I would say that my mother. I would say my mother. My mother always called things as they were. She was, when I went away, when I started high school, and she went off and decided that she was going to get a job. She did, and I was told I had to study. I couldn't work. I had to study. Well, that didn't fit into my bill of goods. So I went down to the same store my mother got a sales job at, and I got a job, but I didn't tell my father because my father worked the night shift, and if he ever knew I went and got a job, he'd have a fit. I had to get good grades to go to college. I figured, why can't I get good grades to go to college and work too? And then I wouldn't have to ask him for a quarter to go to the movies to see a double feature and get popcorn. It was only 25 cents.
Yeah.
So, and that annoyed me. And I loved clothes, and I wanted to buy my own clothes. So I figured, you know, a nice store that sold pretty clothes would be good. And Nana got a discount, and she liked it, and she thought it was fun. So I got a job there, went to work one day, and I saw my mother, and she said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm working. And she laughed, and she said, good for you. She said, always be independent. And my mother's influence on me was, get your education. You always, even if you get married, you can fall back on it. And at my day and age, you were either a nurse or a teacher. So I said, well, I'm not going to be a nurse, so I'll be a teacher. And so I did get my teaching degree, but my mother always said, be independent and never rely on a man or anyone else to take care of you.
That's good. Of all the people, you've told like a lot of old stories about, you know, people who are no longer with us. Of all the people that you've lost in your life, who do you miss the most and what do you miss about
them? My mother.
And what do you miss about her?
She was very smart. She had a great brain and a fabulous memory. And she carried the history. She carried the history of our family.
Yeah.
And she knew everything. She knew all about our relatives in Italy. She knew all about our relatives here. She knew the history of even my father's side of the family. And she was just phenomenal. I mean, I miss that brain. I mean, she drove us nuts. But I miss that brain. I mean, she was very, very smart, Carrie, and you know that. Mm-hmm. You knew her. I always had respect for her. And sometimes she wasn't so nice to me, but I knew enough to respect her. I learned how to keep my mouth shut, you know. I have to say that she was a force in that when I got divorced, she didn't worry about me, and rightly so, because she knew you'll do okay.
Yeah.
You'll be okay. And she was right, you know. And so I believed in myself, and I think I got that from her.
That's really beautiful.
But it's interesting to me that there were women that influenced my life. Mm-hmm. And my brother Bob, who wrote two books, they're the women in the books that influenced his life.
Well, you came from a very female-heavy family.
Yeah. Well, also, I finally realized in life that in an Italian, and I grew up very, very Italian. There was no doubt about it. I was raised an Italian-American girl, not an American-Italian, Italian-American. And the women are the matriarchs.
Yeah.
And the women are the strong women, are the strong people in this society. And I do miss my mother terribly.
Well, you had a lot of good, 100, well, I guess you weren't there the first, what, 25?
Well, I had her until, I had
you
her.
You had about 80 years of her.
I had, well, almost.
Seven, when did she pass away?
She passed away in 2012. No, it was 13.
So 13
2013. 2013. So it was 5. Is it only 5 years?
Yeah.
Wow. Coming on 6 in November.
Yeah.
In March. But.
Yeah, because I think I had moved home by then.
But it was interesting because, even now, I'll say, Jesus, I wish she were around because I want to ask her this.
Yeah. I know. You do say that.
I do.
Can you tell me one of your happiest memories?
In my life?
Yeah.
I think the happiest... I tell you, I'm happiest now.
Really?
I really am.
Life just keeps getting better?
Yes.
That's good.
I mean,
it's a good sign.
You don't. That's the other thing I learned from my mother. You don't ever look back.
Yeah.
You don't look back, and you always look forward. You look today and forward. And it's always helped me through many crises, and so therefore I don't have any. You say my best memories. Well, this year. How about this year? My party.
Yeah.
That was a highlight of the year for me.
Yeah.
And next year will be a super highlight because I'll have two grandchildren being married.
Yeah. Do you have, like, a proudest moment? Either personally or professionally or anything?
Well, I think when I bought that real estate company in Orange County, that was when I purchased it from John
Atwater.
Yeah, that's
big.
Yeah, when I purchased it from John Atwater. And I was the only woman sole proprietor in that community.
And you, that was, how long had you been a realtor at that point?
I was a realtor at that point for 7 years.
Okay.
8 years. Yeah.
Okay.
7, 8 years.
And then you...
And I learned my business. This is a person that truly influenced my life, was the owner, John Atwater. And he...
Did you work for him?
I worked for him.
And then you bought the business.
And then he retired and I bought the business.
Got it. And how long did you have that business before you moved to the desert?
I had it for 8 years.
Okay.
And then I decided it was time to move on. I had enough of Orange County.
Yeah.
You know. But I've been very fortunate in my life.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't ever say luck because you make your own luck. I've been fortunate.
So we only have about 5 more minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you want to tell me now that you've never told me before?
God, I don't know. What have I told you?
I don't know.
I love you more than anything in the world. You're my first grandchild.
I know.
And you were so, I can still see you on that warming table. And you on that little warming table, and there's that little feisty thing sitting there, and I'm thinking, oh my God, she came early when she decided to. She's less than 5 pounds, look at her. And that was a very momentous point in my life.
You had another generation.
I had another generation, and... I don't know, honey. I've had some good ups and I've had a lot of really good things happen in my life.
How do you think at the end of it you'd like to be remembered?
She did it her way. And, you know, I really did. And, you know, the words of that song mean a lot because, you know, they say to you, you know, I've had regrets, but not even too few to remember or too few to talk about because they don't even mean anything.
Yeah.
You learn from as you go along, but then you move forward.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to move forward. The only thing I think now at this point in my life, and I'm a little bit, it makes me sad sometimes, is that I can feel my body not being as able to do the things that I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
It tells me, hey, you know what? You can't do that. You're tired.
Yeah.
Or your knee bothers you or something, you know, and that's sad.
Well, it's gotten you pretty far.
I'm not done.
You going to live to be 100 like Nana?
No, I don't want to live to be 100, but I'm not finished doing whatever I'm going to do. You know, I don't want to be finished and then be sitting there waiting to die.
Well, it's just never finished.
So I have to keep going.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I think that looking forward, I think that I'd like to be around to see a great-grandchild or two or three or four. Who knows? Look at Nana. Look how...